Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
What do I like to do? I have to think.
Okay.
I think I've been too much involved in journalism to the point that I've forgotten other things.
I am talking to Ding Magot. She's a freelance journalist for the Voice of America, South Sudan In Focus program.
I was standing so I can take my transport to go and meet up with my friends because it was a Sunday. So after I've already crossed the road, like four men approached me, like they pushed me with a lot of force inside the car. So I was like kicking and trying to scream because it's still like an open market on that area.
They took her phone and recorded immediately. She wasn't sure if they were national security or simply kidnappers. They didn't have uniform, but they also didn't take the cash in her purse.
There were many people, so I thought maybe if I scream, someone will come and help me. But nobody really came to help me. And then one of the men just threatened me. He pointed, and I knew that if I don't cooperate with him, maybe something can happen to me. So I just decided to just relax and do what they wanted me to do. So I just entered in the vehicle. I sat in the middle of two people. There was one on my right and one on my left, and then one in front, and then there was a driver. One of them was wearing a mask. He was asking me, "Do you remember me? Do you know who I am?" I said, "No, I don't know who you are."
Welcome to Asylum, presented and co-produced by me, Opoka Paropoto, for Develop Audio. This series was supported by the Pulitzer Center. Ding Magot has been arrested on Sunday, the 15th of August 2022. The vehicle headed towards Juba Town. She was taken into a national security building and put in a room where they had asked her for her phone password.
I asked them, "Why do you want my password?" When I asked that question, he took a broom and he hit me on the elbow. The broom broke and then he slapped my face, you know. So I realized if I start asking a lot of questions, I'm just going to end up getting more injuries. So I didn't ask questions anymore. I gave him the password of my phone, but it's like he didn't get what he was looking for.
When I spoke to Ding Magot, I had many questions. First, about the official charge and if she had even been told what she was being charged with. They claimed she was part of a protest, but in reality, she had been interviewing a couple of protesters from the University of Juba who had protested in the morning.
Again, they asked me questions. Who are you? What do you do? You know, I told them who I am. I told them what I do. I'm a journalist. I work for VOA. And when I said VOA, I was slapped again across the eyes.
I'm sorry for what you went through. I'm really, really sorry for that.
Oh, yeah, it's okay. So after they did that, They going through my WhatsApp groups. They looked at the pictures that the protesters sent to me. They sent it to themselves, and then they wanted to hear the audio that I had recorded. They played it, so I could just hear the whole interview that I had conducted.
Interview only lasted about 10 minutes. It was at the Nyakuro Cultural Center, which is an open place. Still, the authorities pushed hard for her to admit that she was at the protest in person.
And they kept asking me, did you take part in the protest? I said, no, I did not take part in the protest. They tried so hard to say that I took part in the protest.
When I was doing my research for this interview, I looked at almost 20 to 30 stories about what happened to you. And all the stories were saying you were at the protest.
And that's what got me to stay in prison even longer, because they kept on saying, like, she was in the protest.
Even iRadio reported, she was covering a protest. You weren't covering a protest. You interviewed people who protested. You interviewed them after the protest.
You know, the police also kept on going with the narrative that I was among the protesters, which is not true.
Do you feel that you were targeted to send a message to journalists that they can be arrested if they participate in reporting about protests? Do you feel you were targeted? Do you feel it was deliberate?
I feel like this was a threat and like a warning to other journalists. Like, we're one of the media houses that doesn't put one-sided information. And because of that, it's easy to get into trouble with people who don't want the truth to be out there. So basically, their protest was about the rising cost of goods and services in the country. They were worried about the prices in the market increasing. They said, like, things are becoming expensive. They can't afford anything. During the protest, some policemen came and then they shot one of their colleagues on the leg. And then others ran away, but others were caught and arrested. You know, I didn't think it was like such a big deal when I went to do the story, because I felt like I wasn't really in the protest, so it's okay to do the story. Then in the morning, another police vehicle came. You know, the one that's like a pickup. And then we were made to go in the back.
They went to Melekea Police Station.
Then I saw like my phone was there, my recorder was there. Everyone's phone was there, you know, someone was calling my phone. So then I thought maybe I can finally take my phone. But when I wanted to pick it up, this person that just switched it off. I never really got my phone or anything back until today. I never got back my phone and recorder.
When I myself was detained at the police station in Munuki because I had a lot of hair, they shaved an X on my head from the front to the back, big line. And then another line from the left ear to the right ear. They tell you that the reason they do that is because when they catch you again as a journalist who is talking out against the government, they will be able to spot you very easily. The two students she had interviewed were lying on the floor. The students were being asked, "Why did you speak to this woman?" referring to Dingma Gott. The students replied that they spoke to Voice of America because it had a large reach. They were asked if they were a political group. They said no, they were just concerned citizens.
Again, I thought we were going to be released, but we were not released. I was taken to the women's cell. They refused to take my statement. I started to see, like, people starting to come to the cell. People at home, they noticed I was not there. So I guess they had been called and told that I am missing, you know.
It was around 7 p.m. It was getting dark, but still no freedom. They brought food and water. She couldn't eat, but her throat was so dry that she forced sips of water down. She slept until morning.
The lawyers, they came and they saw me, and I was able to get a statement in. They said that I was going to go to court, and then the vehicle, it went to the court, but then it didn't really make it to the court. It just like turned and it went straight to the women's prison.
Juba Main Prison is an absolutely horrific place. It was constructed for only 400 inmates, but held over 1,000 in September 2015. Much has been written about the hostile, overcrowded place, but the conditions there are not improving.
You know, like once you just go to prison, it's like your appearance just changes immediately, you know?
I cannot imagine everything that you went through. I cannot begin to imagine.
They did testing to make sure we don't have like any infectious diseases like COVID, HIV. And then I was taken to the female women's prison.
But I also understand that your head was shaved.
You can't have braids in the women's prison. If you have braids, they tell you just cut it off.
When the braids were being cut off, did you lose any hair or it was just only the braids?
It was just the braids. I think maybe they just exaggerated it to make it a huge story.
She realized that the more questions she asked, then the more trouble she found herself in.
I was just like following what the authorities were saying, like the policeman, they'll be like, come here to the prison. I just followed them. I asked them, why am I here? Because I didn't really know anything, to be honest. I wasn't sure what is happening.
I don't know if you're very comfortable describing it for me. How did it feel in the prison?
So the first day, of course, I was very like worried because this is not like where I normally sleep. It's a different place, you know. It's a little bit overcrowded. And when it reaches around 6 p.m., they come and do a roll call to see how many people are there, whether there's like someone who ran away or not. So you can't come out at that time. You can't come out.
Did you have any conversations with some of the women in the prison?
I kind of like thought to myself, like, let me see this like a story, you know? Because if I had to see myself as a prisoner, I think I would have completely broken down and everything. And I would talk to anyone who was approaching me to talk to me. Because once you go there, everyone knows your business, you know? The moment you just go there, everyone knows who you are. So when I went there, they already knew that I was a journalist. And she has been brought here by the government. And it went around the whole prison.
The inmates were giving Ding Magot sympathy. And she returned the kindness with food.
I used to share food with them. So nobody used to go hungry, you know. So fruits, food, sodas, you know, all of those stuff. They tried to see how I am. They tried testing me to see like she's better or something, you know. I usually just assimilate with people easily.
Ding had four lawyers. They wrote a letter of appeal saying that what she was doing wasn't a crime and she was simply interviewing the protesters.
There was a whole campaign. We were called the Konyo Konyo 7. It was known like almost everywhere.
She was charged under Section 82 of the Penal Code Act 2008. Which is the possession of articles for criminal use.
They said that like the recorder was used for criminal use because it can reach a mass audience and whatever I say can cause maybe chaos. That's what they were trying to say. I'm not sure what they meant.
So you were released on bail?
A bail without condition means that I didn't pay any money. Sorry, it's a bit funny.
In the reports in my research, it says you were detained for almost 8 days. Is that accurate?
Yes. So the 8th day was on Monday. That's when I was released. I felt like maybe it was a way to sabotage my job and to threaten me and to make me not want to continue with the field because they asked me whether I'm a spy because it's an international media organization. Voice of America is international. There are always a misconception that journalists are spies because, you know, the way we do our job, you know, we interrogate people. But it's not like really an interrogation. It's just questions to find out what happened.
Whether you're a secret agent for the United States government.
Yeah, like I'm a spy. That's what they asked.
After the imprisonment, Ding went to the United States for the Edward J. Mural selected by the American Embassy for a fellowship.
Because of the issue that happened in Juba, I wasn't okay mentally. I wasn't okay. I wasn't even focusing in the meetings. And then I was feeling sick afterwards. And a lot of people noticed that I was not 100% myself. In my mind, I wanted to go back to South Sudan because that's my country. Maybe it's because I was out of the environment and my body was now reacting, but I had this feeling that I didn't want to continue journalism at all. I felt like I was done with it. I had like some few projects that I had left in Juba. So I had to like force myself to finish them. Afterwards, I had to make the huge decision of whether to stay here or to go back in Juba, where I'm not sure whether my safety is going to be guaranteed. If I had to go back to Juba, I'm still going to continue being a journalist, you know?
Even though she wasn't doing any stories like she used to, plenty of people in the United States told her to reconsider and stay over there and perhaps seek asylum.
The colleagues that I met during the leadership program, they kept on asking me to just try and find a way to stay here because it might be more safe in America.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Being in a new country, it comes with a lot of challenges sometimes. Taking medicines, you know, like, I just wasn't okay. So I visited my auntie. I stayed there with her for a while until I recovered. And then after I recovered, that's when I was, like, with a lot of convincing from people. And then I had to think maybe people are right, you know. Like, I spoke to my dad, like, a few days ago. He asked me how's everything. And I told him, like, yeah, I'm still going through the asylum process. I still haven't done the interview, you know. I just talk to them when I feel like I'm having a good mood, you know. I don't like to talk to them when, let's say, like something bad happened, you know, because I don't want them to worry because I'm far away, you know. I try not to talk to them when I'm having those moments. So I don't want to be in this country, things like that, you know. Because, you know, if they talk to me when I'm having like a breakdown or something like that, they will notice that something is wrong.
Asylum is always a very difficult choice. It can also be very unpredictable at times.
Like the thing that is very stressful is like how long the asylum process is, you know.
You have to drop everything because like you, I came in a program sponsored by the Dutch government with a very big NGO. So I was meeting senior government officials, speaking at the Dutch parliament, speaking with very many big Dutch journalists. And then when you ask for asylum, everything stops. Yeah. Then you start from zero. You become nobody.
Yeah.
It can be very difficult. I completely understand. But you have to stay strong. You have to stay focused. What I want to tell you is that you're a very brave and very, very, very strong woman and a very brave journalist. And I'm very happy that you're safe because that is the most important thing. And that you can start a new page. You can start a new life.
Yeah, thank you for reaching out to me.
Digma Gott's story had really shaken me, but also energized me with a measure of hope. The words of encouragement I told her on the call in some ways were voices I was echoing to myself.
My mom, my brothers, my cousins, my uncles, everybody's in South Sudan. I am the only one in the Netherlands. But also just my mom is growing a lot older and she needs a lot of support. So there is that as well. And then because I have stayed in Europe for the last 5 years or 6 years, there is a lot of pressure from her. She's like, oh, Chris, you should consider coming back. She's like, whatever problems the national security have with you, we can go and apologize and work something out. And for me, that is not an option.
2013, basically the government had issued an order for CTFM not to broadcast news and for my voice not to be on air. So my best option was, okay, maybe I can go to print, because they didn't explicitly mention that. So I got a job with the Juba Monitor, and then the problems started.
The kind of threats I was receiving, and this is from a lot of insider information from cousins who are working with the national security, they said, Chris, your file doesn't exist. Basically, if the national security is after you, and this is the same policy in the old Sudan, is that they would open a file and then they any article you write which is critical of the government would be put in that file. So that the day they take you into detention, they will point out, oh, you wrote this, you wrote this, you wrote this. If your file is active, it means there is no serious action is going to be taken on you yet. But if your file disappears, that means it has been handed over to external security. And the job of external security is not to interrogate you, is not to discuss with you, is to make you disappear, is to make the problem disappear. So when my file went missing, one of my cousins, he said, Chris, whatever you do, do not leave your office. So I had to camp in the office for a few days. Because that is it. That means you're done. That is how I basically started sending emails to CPJ, to a lot of other people, to get me out of South Sudan as quickly as they could. They needed to act really quick, because some of the guys, they were actually outside our gate of the newspaper, and they would be like, oh, Chris, we want to give you a lift home. I'd be like, no, guys, tonight I'm not going home. I have a lot of work to do. And they would be very casual about it. I left to Kenya, and then from Kenya, the next day I was flown to Uganda. They also tried to get me in Uganda twice, and then came to the UK, went to India, and then finally came to the Netherlands.
Then you have the new phase, where for about 3 months, everything is really good. And then after that, when I seek asylum, everything goes nasty, where you realize that, well, I may be safe, but everything else is missing. In fact, that is a period when I begin asking myself, was the sacrifice worth it? Because in terms of the networks I previously had, you realize that now you're on your own. I remember one of the jobs, very odd jobs I did, working in a paper factory, basically cutting sheets of paper. I didn't need a pen or a recorder anymore. So a knife was my tool of choice. You're just very angry at the job, but you try to be happy. But you're working as a machine rather than as a human being anymore. Just that temptation of going back and being somebody, it's always very inviting, I would say. There are very many exiled journalists who have been here for more than 20, 30 years. They have found a way to integrate at the late stages of their career. But then we have other unfortunate cases where they went into exile, but they made the decision to go back and they got killed. There's one journalist called Lochoi Lomornana. He was a very good colleague. He fled to Kenya, sought asylum, stayed. But then we believe he's an example of the deal between the national security in South Sudan and the security in Kenya to have him abducted, taken back to South Sudan and killed. And we know he died, but his body was never recovered. Then we have Isaac Vuni, also a journalist, sort of slightly elderly journalist, but very vocal, writes a lot of op-eds. He came to exile in Uganda. Things became very difficult. He didn't know where else to go. So he felt the safest place for him is to return back to his home village. But still, six armed men showed up at his home and he was kidnapped. And later, his body was dumped in a garden near his house. There are examples of journalists who left before me and managed to find a safe place and stay. And then there are journalists who went into exile but could not find the right support mechanisms. Life circumstances forced them to return back to South Sudan and they got killed. even in the Netherlands itself, I'm always very conscious of, if I am attending an event and there are South Sudanese or there are Sudanese, you always want to know, who are they? What is their background? What do they do? How did they come here? What are they doing here? You ask all those questions. I had an interaction at an event. I was a guest speaker, and the co-guest speaker was a South Sudanese activist, but his organization was openly very pro-government. So when they come outside, yes, they talk generally about what is happening in the country, but they don't give very many specifics. But then their job is to basically find out, who are those people giving too many specifics? And then they want to know, oh, where is Chris? We heard he's in the Netherlands. So you always want to be very careful who you meet, or if they're asking about you, why are they asking about you? Because they claim to be journalists, but you cannot find any single work they have done. You cannot find any single individual, either from my circle or from other circles, who can vouch for them. And then a lot of these people I know, they're just masquerading as journalists. They're all national security agents who are just being sent on missions to find out what are people doing here who are critical. And they know most of us. If I spot somebody and my gut feeling is that this person is South Sudanese or Sudanese, everything just changes in me. You begin to think in a different way. You begin to think about safety, about what step do I take. Just those awkward exchanges where you look at each other and you feel like, oh, we must be from the same country. And I'm like, oh, yes, we are, but I'm going to walk in a different direction as quickly as I can. While I continue to have these jobs, I still try to interact with journalist organizations, and also had a few professional engagements, whether with people at the university, where I would be invited as a guest lecturer, or just with NGOs and so on.
One of the things that would be a success story for me already is just the idea of bringing together 6 or 7 or 8 journalists to have conversations once a week about their mental health, about how they are making money, how they are taking care of their family, and so on.
It compelled me to talk to a young journalist colleague who is still in South Sudan, Garang Abraham Malak, a South Sudanese multimedia journalist, blogger, media trainer, and fact checker. I needed to speak to him and see how I could help. You have been listening to Asylum, produced and presented by me, Opoka Paropoto. Our executive producer is Paul McNally. This is a production of Develop Audio. We produce podcasts like this one and train a growing network of African journalists to create quality audio. This series was supported by the Pulitzer Center. Until our loud whispers meet again, stay vigilant, stay curious, and ask questions. Every truth seeks refuge as it escapes the jaws of oppression. From a tiny Dutch village called Kokengen in Utrecht, this is Asylum, where exile fuels the fire of inquiry.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.